ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
G'day, welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 5th of January. I'm David Lipson in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. It was an audacious operation that stunned the world. Donald Trump sending in US special forces to snatch Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife and bundle them off to America to face court on narco-terrorism and conspiracy charges. The Venezuelan military has now endorsed the interim presidency of Maduro's former Vice President Delcy Rodriguez, and US Secretary of State Marco Rubio insists the US is not at war against Venezuela, but against the drug trafficking cartels. But big questions remain. What will happen to the country's oil? Will Venezuela's acting president continue to back Maduro? And what does this brazen attack by the United States mean for international law? Shortly, we'll take you to Caracas, but first, here's Nicole Johnston.
Airstrikes over Venezuela's capital, Caracas, in the middle of the night. Powerful explosions lit up the night sky on Saturday as more than 150 US attack aircraft fired on key military sites, an airbase, airport, and port. Electricity and communications were knocked out. The target, the country's president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, Celia Flores. Special forces breached Maduro's home compound and captured the couple. They were flown onto a US assault ship and then via Guantanamo to New York. US President Donald Trump.
America will never allow foreign powers to rob our people or drive us back into and out of our own hemisphere. That's what they did. Furthermore, under the now deposed dictator Maduro, Venezuela was increasingly hosting foreign adversaries in our region and acquiring menacing offensive weapons that could threaten US interests and lives, and they used those weapons last night.
Now US Secretary of State Marco Rubio appears to have backed off on President Trump's claim that the US will run Venezuela, saying Washington will control its oil and its boats to force change.
Coming into or out of Venezuela, loaded with oil or on its way in to pick up oil, and we can pick and choose which ones we go after. We have court orders for each one.
After arriving at a small airport in New York City, Maduro was flown to Manhattan. A video posted on social media by the White House showed Maduro smiling as he was escorted through a US Drug Enforcement office on Saturday. Venezuela's government has called the US attack imperialist and a serious threat to the global order. The country's defense minister, Vladimir Padrino López.
Llamo al pueblo de Venezuela.
I call on the people of Venezuela to remain peaceful and orderly, and not to fall into the trap of psychological warfare, threats and fear that others want to impose on us. I call on the people of Venezuela to resume their economic, labour, educational and all other activities in the coming days.
Vanessa Neumann is a former special envoy to the UK for Venezuela and now runs a defence advisory company called Asymmetrica. She describes her reaction to the weekend's dramatic events.
The sight of him in handcuffs and the Nike sweatpants that have now sold out from Nike and doing the perp walk was something for Venezuelans that inspired hope, like some god that had fallen from Mount Olympus. And it gave Venezuelans hope that these guys can be captured, they can be brought to justice, and there could one day be democracy.
But Cornelia Mayer, a global oil expert and chief executive of Mayer Resources, says the US is clearly focused on Venezuela's oil, but scaling up its production will be difficult.
Venezuela used to produce more than 3 million barrels a day in the pre-Chavez times, and it's now sort of come down more than 70%. This is not a light switch. This is a very difficult industrial process which takes time.
That's global oil expert Cornelia Mayer, ending that report by Nicole Johnston. Well, let's go now to the ABC's US correspondent, Rachel Clayton, who's in Brooklyn, outside the prison where Nicolas Maduro is being held. Rachel, you're outside the building where Maduro is being held. What is next for him?
That's right. I've been here for the past few hours. He arrived here last night after disembarking a plane that landed in upstate New York and was taken via helicopter to this Brooklyn Center, a notorious Brooklyn prison described by some U.S. media. He was taken by U.S. forces and he was flanked by U.S. forces as he walked in. And there was a video that the White House shared of him walking down the hall of the center last night wearing a black tracksuit. They called it a perp walk. And he said, Maduro said good night and happy new year, which was sounded a little odd given his situation. He is due in court tomorrow on Monday, New York time, at a court in Manhattan for an arraignment. His arrest and detainment here attracted hundreds of protesters this morning too. They were holding signs and placards and shouting for him to be released. A lot of the people here did not agree with U.S. intervention in Venezuela, and they're about to sort of come back each day he's being held here.
What about on the streets in Venezuela? Is there any sense of what day-to-day life will be like now for its nearly 30 million citizens?
It sounds like it's quite a scary time for Venezuelans at the moment. The government has said it's going to assert its sovereignty with troops on the ground. We're not really sure exactly what that means, if it's going to be some sort of physical resistance to U.S. intervention in the country. There was a state of emergency declared after Venezuela was attacked, meaning that Venezuelans were not allowed to go outside during certain times. We have seen them outside, so perhaps that those rules aren't being asserted as violently as some people feared. The Venezuelan government is, or Maduro's government is still in charge. The vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, was sworn in as acting president yesterday. She continues to say that Maduro is the one true leader of Venezuela. President Donald Trump has said this morning that Delcy must do what his government says, that they are in control now and that there will be severe consequences if she does not. Secretary of State Marco Rubio also spoke with US media this morning, asserting that the US will remain in control in Venezuela and giving a few more details on what that could look like.
We are not going to be able to allow in our hemisphere a country that becomes a crossroads for the activities of all of our adversaries around the world. We just can't allow it. We can't have a country where the people in charge of its military and in charge of its police department are openly cooperating with drug trafficking organizations.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio and our correspondent Rachel Clayton in Brooklyn. There are mixed feelings among Venezuelans about the end of Nicolas Maduro's reign as the country's leader. Sandra Gatman is a UK-based Venezuelan journalist. Sandra, a lot of Venezuelans saw Nicolas Maduro as a murderous dictator who used drug money, oil revenue to enrich himself while overseeing the near economic collapse of this oil-rich nation. Will they be happy, though, that he's been deposed in this way?
I think it really depends, David, on who you're speaking to. There's a very stark division between the Venezuelans who can express themselves freely outside the country and the Venezuelans who might have a mix of opinions in the country but can't necessarily share them. So I think that a large majority of Venezuelans can agree that they are happy and grateful to see the back of Nicolas Maduro and his wife, but very trepidatious about what comes next, because I think everyone is in agreement that his regime is far from over, far from being toppled. And so I think that while there is that sense of relief, and I'm watching social media every day, there is a lot of joy, lots of memes and reels and jokes going around about how momentous and amazing in their eyes this occasion is. But the kind of day after, the strategy going forward, there are enormous question marks there. And at the moment, you know, I just spoke to my grandmother, my 94-year-old grandmother, who's in the center of Caracas, and she says she can basically hear a pin drop outside. There are no cars, no one walking in the streets. So it's very eerie, and people are also scared about what might come next.
Yeah, a lot of tension there. What do we know of this new interim leadership?
Well, one way to look at what's happened is it's been a decapitation of power, meaning that while Maduro and his wife have been removed from the picture, the rest of the power structure remains. So right now we've got Delcy Rodriguez, who stepped in as acting president. She was sworn in by Venezuela's Supreme Court. And U.S. President Donald Trump confirmed that she's the one they're talking to in Caracas right now. She's been the vice president since 2018. She's been sanctioned by the U.S. and EU over human rights, a very key member of Maduro's inner circle. She held a press conference yesterday and seemed very defiant about defending, quote, Venezuelan sovereignty. In that room, there were several other key figures who control the military and paramilitary groups, for example. So Maduro's chain of command seems pretty intact. The questions, though, now are about how closely she's been working with the Trump administration and will work with the Trump administration going forward. Some people are going as far as suggesting there may have been a backroom deal there, but it's all hearsay at this point. So I guess we'll wait and see in the coming days how closely they play ball together, really.
And thinking ahead beyond the next few days, what are the biggest concerns for Venezuelans?
I think right now there are immediate concerns and long-term concerns. The immediate concerns are, you know, Monday and the week ahead, getting food on the dinner tables, getting the medicines people need. People want to see a return back to some kind of normality. And, you know, the people in charge in Venezuela have urged people to go back to school, go back to their businesses, go back to their jobs. So there are the immediate concerns as to whether life can go back to normal. But the long-term concerns are very much still there. They include, you know, what does revamping Venezuela's oil infrastructure actually mean? Will there be a democratic transition, or is that something that people are talking about but won't actually fulfill? You've got Maria Corina Machado, the opposition figure who everyone assumed would be ushered into power in the wings. Many people think she's been sidelined. So lots of question marks there, and we don't have any answers. I hope they'll come in the coming days.
That's Venezuelan journalist Sandra Gatman. Phil Gunson is a senior analyst for the Andes region at the International Crisis Group based in Caracas. Phil Gunson, thanks for being with us. So we now have an interim president, the former vice president to Nicolas Maduro, Delcy Rodriguez. She's received the backing of the Venezuelan military, but Donald Trump says the US will run Venezuela in the short term. So who is in charge?
Well, yes, I mean, Delcy Rodriguez is the president, acting president, formally speaking. Trump is not running Venezuela. There's nobody here to do that. The US doesn't have troops on the ground or anybody actually to pull the levers of power directly in Venezuela. I think what Trump means when he says that he's going to be running things is that he's going to threaten them from a distance, that if they don't do as he says, then there'll be another wave of bombing, or potentially Delcy Rodriguez could suffer the same fate as Maduro. But of course, Delcy, you know, she has the title of president, she has the attributes of the presidency, but she will have to deal with the military, and that fundamentally means dealing with, in the first instance, the defense minister, Paulino Lopez, and the interior minister, Diosdado Cabello. These are the guys with the guns.
Yeah, and that is so significant. There is something like 6 million guns in Venezuela. Powerful armed gangs beside the military, the formal military, also guerrilla groups are everywhere. How will they respond to this transition?
Well, you know, it's only a transition in the sense that, you know, there was an unscheduled interruption of the presidency, but the rest of the power structure remains intact. And in that sense, the guerrillas, the Colombian guerrillas who are here in strength, as you mentioned, and the armed gangs, the violent criminal gangs that have benefited from the lax application of the law, to put it mildly, in Venezuela, and who have no interest in seeing a restoration of democracy and the rule of law, they will be fine so long as there's no threat of a political transition. And that is the big question mark, I think, over what's going to happen now. Is there going to be a deal involving some sort of restoration of institutional rule, free and fair elections, or will Trump make some kind of deal with Delcy Rodriguez and the other people in government here that is fundamentally pragmatic and to do with material resources?
So would things be much different under Delcy Rodriguez?
I don't think so. Not in the first instance in terms of politics. You know, Delcy has been a very close ally of Maduro for a very long time. Their political origins in the far left are very similar. Their instincts in terms of any kind of transition are very similar. I think probably both Maduro, had he remained in power, and Delcy and her brother Jorge Rodriguez, who is the head of the parliament, their instinct is to open up the economy, to try to make a deal on those terms. But politically, they are just as hard line as the people in the military. They are not really interested in any kind of political transition.
The Trump administration claims all of this is about stopping the importation of drugs. Will the capture of President Maduro make any substantive difference to the drug trade, particularly of fentanyl, which is the leading cause of death for Americans aged 18 to 45?
It will have zero impact on fentanyl because Venezuela doesn't produce or traffic fentanyl. There's no fentanyl passing through here on its way to the United States, so far as we know. As far as the impact of removing Maduro, no, the drugs trade, I mean, drugs flow through Venezuela fundamentally because Venezuela is right next door to Colombia, which produces almost all the world's cocaine, has a more than 2,000-kilometer border with Colombia. And it's geographically positioned in such a way that it's a convenient launching pad for trafficking both to the United States, but most importantly to Europe. And that's going to continue to be the case. And so long as there are military and other officials who are open to being bribed by the drugs traffickers, that is going to continue, at least in the medium to long term. It may have been temporarily disrupted.
Phil Gunson from the International Crisis Group based in Caracas. Well, affordable childcare is just a dream for many Australians, but it's hoped reaching it will become a bit easier with major changes to the childcare subsidy system from today. The so-called activity test has been axed, meaning parents are guaranteed at least 3 days of subsidised care a week, regardless of how much they work, volunteer or study. Isabel Masali reports.
Single mother of two, Rachel, describes her experience with childcare as a journey that's made her cynical.
It's had its ups and downs, and a lot of parents I know, we feel and we share the pain of daycare, that it's not easy in terms of those costs and just the experiences of some children as well.
Today she's waiting to find out how changes to childcare subsidies will affect her wallet.
I'm hopeful that this financial, you know, package will really help families because it is a significant cost, childcare.
Several advocates for early childhood education and care, or ECEC, are excited about this change. The activity test for parents has been replaced with a guaranteed minimum of 3 days a week of subsidised care.
So what has happened previously is that as parents increase their activity, the number of hours that they can get a childcare subsidy for has increased as well.
That's Caroline Crosabalo from advocacy group The Front Project.
If you weren't working or learning at all during a week, then you would get a very small number of hours subsidised. And as you kind of did more work or did more learning, then you would get more hours subsidised. What's happening as of today is that families are now eligible for 3 days of subsidised ECEC, no matter whether they're working or learning.
Families who meet certain requirements can still access more than 3 days of subsidised care. And the same goes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. Caroline Crosabalo believes it'll make a big difference.
There are lots of families who have casual hours, for example, so 1 week they might need it and then the next week they mightn't meet it. And so for all of those families, they will now be able to lock in exactly how much they know they have to pay each week for early childhood education and care, which is going to give those kids access to great high-quality learning. But it's also going to give families the certainty to be able to take on more work.
The federal government expects the new system to benefit about 66,000 families in its first financial year. Professor Peter Hurley from Victoria's Mitchell Institute.
I think it's important to remember that, you know, not all families choose to use early learning. So just because there is 3 days available, not everyone will take it up. The price isn't changing, not with this, what's being announced. And also, there's still the issue of having to be able to find a place and have access to the service. So it's not a guarantee that you're going to get a place. It's being termed a guarantee in the sense that you'll be able to access the subsidy.
Families earning more than $500,000 a year won't be eligible, meaning most of the population will be eligible.
Isabel Massali reporting. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm David Lipson.